let's say you and I go out for a run together, and we say we're going to go out for an hour, and, you know, we're both going the same pace, and your heart rate is, you know, 160, and you're huffing and puffing, and you're not able to really talk too much to me, and I'm kind of like, you know, at an easy run and able to talk to you, then I'm clearly much more aerobic than you. You're much more anaerobic than I am. You're not going to last as long. I'm going to pick on you a little bit. Why would you ever want to drink soy milk?
Oh, well, I'll tell you the answer.
Yep. That's what he's looking for.
What is your goal? I mean, like, you know, is your goal to lose weight, or
what
are you training for an event?
What is your goal, Scott?
What is your goal in life?
Yeah. We'll start with life, and then we'll get back to the run.
You know? Well, first of all, my goal is to finish,
okay? Yeah. Life? Finish life?
Finish
that's a,
life.
That's a guarantee. You will finish your life.
Sweet.
In your example, you drank a cup of coffee, went out, ran the same pace, produced the same output, but your heart rate went down 10 beats per minute. Is that right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I'm ready. Explain that one to me, doctor. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Faith Goss.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we have the Sock Doc with us. And this is his second trip. He's been on before, and with any good fortune, he'll be on a number of times, because what he brings with him, well, not his shoes, because he's wearing socks. And
in fact, doesn't wear shoes.
Not in the office. This doctor does not wear shoes in the office, and therefore the name Sock Doc. But he brings his education and his experience in endurance sports, because essentially that's what where a great deal of Sock Doc's athletic background comes from, is from endurance. And the areas that we want to talk to him today about are aerobic versus anaerobic work, and when to, how much, when should we start, and how can we benefit. But before we get started, Sock Doc, tell us a little bit about your endurance participation. What type of endurance sports did you participate in?
Well, my background is pretty much triathlons. I actually did cross country way back in high school, 20 plus years ago, and wrestling too, actually. And then I started getting into biking and started doing the good old, some of your listeners might know or remember the Coors Light Biathlon series, or Duathlon series, that used to exist back in the early 90s, late 80s. But then that was slowly faded out with a huge increase in participation in triathlons. And then I figured I needed to learn to swim. I already knew how to swim, but then I got into triathlons and got competitive in swimming, and then got into the Ironman era and started doing those, and done 20 of them.
Wow.
Finished 16, six in Hawaii, and a whole lot of other triathlons, trail long, you know, up to 20 miles on the trail for racing, bike races, 100 milers. A lot of endurance stuff like that. So triathlons, running, road and trail, and cycling.
Awesome.
So this doc's laboratory is outside, not
outside.
In the lab.
That's right, on top of the globe. That's for sure. Well, the Sock Doc has a great website, sock.doc.com. I'm not taking that out. You know,
I tried that last time.
I did this last time, didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah.
So just help me out. Move your lips, Scott, and I'll make the sound come out.
Don is not a stutterer.
Sockdoc.com.
Okay, sockdoc.com. Right. That's where you'll go. And if you go there, you'll see all kinds of data and information and training principles. The site is just filled with information about how to prevent injury, and if you have an injury, what to do, your first line of defense. And he hits it with videos. He breaks down what sciatic pain is. He breaks down Achilles tendonitis. He will take you through each step that you would hope that you would receive from your own doctor when you walk in. And often we hear, just stop running, but you're not going to hear that from the Sock Doc. He's going to show you some solutions.
And in fact, a lot of the information on there is not necessarily how to recover,
but how to prevent these injuries.
Right.
And that's where we come to what we want to talk about today. And maybe if we don't get through it all, we'll have to have him on another time. But we're talking about he's written five principles of training.
If we're lucky, we'll get two in, and if we're lucky, we get them back for the other three.
So, Faith, the first principle is?
So, the first principle set forth is that aerobic activity is the foundation of your health and fitness. So, what we want to get into is define aerobic activity versus anaerobic activity. Those are words that are often thrown at us, and quite frankly, I don't think I understand what they mean. Can you explain it for us?
Yeah, well, let's just say in a non-scientific perspective, aerobic is when you're burning primarily fat for energy, your stress levels are low, you're not pumping out a lot of cortisol, which is one of our major stress hormones that we make from our adrenal glands, and pretty much that's what aerobic is. Anaerobic.
Can I interrupt for a second? So if we're a trail runner and we're out there for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours on up, it sounds like the aerobic engine is what we're running.
Right. Well, but it depends on how high your heart rate is. So it does get into that too.
Okay.
In other words, well, let's talk about anaerobic first and then we'll explain that.
Good.
So anaerobic would be pretty much the opposite, and which would be, you know, you're burning more sugar than fat. You're at a higher heart rate where you're making cortisol and possibly some other stress hormones like epinephrine. You're never 100% one or the other, unless you did an all out sprint. You know, people usually say no more than a 200-yard sprint. Over that, you've got to use both. But anything under a 200-yard, you know, quarter mile for most is going to be, if you went all out on less than a quarter mile, you could possibly do that all anaerobically. Over that, you're always going to be using both of the systems to various degrees. Now, the healthier you are, and depending on the training intensity and even duration, would determine whether you're more aerobic or anaerobic or vice versa. Now, once you get over time, though, and again, it's all individualized, I've heard up to, you know, 3 hours, even a very healthy, well-built, aerobically conditioned person, once you start going over 3 hours, you're going to be tapping into some of the anaerobic system, even at the same pace, more so than when you were earlier on in that run.
And is there a way to push that, let's say that 3 hour window out so that you don't go into that anaerobic state, maybe 4 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I mean, the answer to that is definitely before 3 hours. In other words, let's say you and I go out for a run together and we say we're going to go out for an hour and, you know, we're both going the same pace and your heart rate is, you know, 160 and you're huffing and puffing and you're not able to really talk too much to me and I'm kind of like, you know, at an easy run and able to talk to you, then I'm clearly much more aerobic than you. You're much more anaerobic than I am. So you're not going to last as long. Now, you can obviously develop your aerobic endurance, so you can run longer and further at the same heart rate and develop your aerobic endurance. But there's always going to be some limiting factor. In other words, can you extend the 3 hours? Yeah, I'm sure you can. How much? That's definitely going to depend on, you know, many things. It's going to depend on your health. It's going to depend on, you know, how well you can utilize your fat stores, you know, it's your stress levels. Can you make that 3.5 hours? I would think so. Can you make it 5? I don't know. I mean, you can always, you know, if you're walking, you're always, you know, pretty much aerobic. But you obviously can't walk forever. I mean, we have fat stores to keep us going for hours and hours and days, but there are other limiting factors such as, you know, dehydration and just general stress of training.
So I was always told that the more cardio I do, the more fat I will burn. So I need to become a runner, and that's why I became a runner. Can you kind of explain what is classified as cardio exercise? Is that anaerobic or aerobic? And can you ever do too much cardio?
Yeah, right. So that's a great question, because one of the main reasons why I wrote the Sock Doc Training Principles is because all the stuff, to say it nicely, going on out there, you know, in the not bashing CrossFit. I think CrossFit's great. My wife does CrossFit, and you know, I think CrossFit can be very beneficial. But a lot of CrossFit's huge. A lot of people are doing, you know, getting back into Olympic weightlifting, and like we were saying before we started recording here, you know, more like Rocky IV type training. And that stuff's all great, but a lot of people are saying, they're calling it chronic cardio. You know, that's the term being used. They're saying, oh, cardio is now bad for you. And these people are calling cardio aerobic. And they're saying aerobic is bad for you. And their idea of aerobic is the runner going out and, you know, running to exhaustion or you know, at least at a very high intensity heart rate and just wasting away their muscle and you know, burning a crazy amount of sugar and just stressing the hell out of their hormonal nervous immune system, basically. So they're saying, well, cardio is bad for you because look what these people are doing. But that's not what it is. If you're, you know, cardio is really meant to, you know, it can be aerobic or anaerobic. You know, if you get on the Stairmaster and go to exhaustion, you're anaerobic. If you go at a high heart rate, you're anaerobic. If you lower that down to an aerobic type pace based off heart rate, based off lactate levels, then you're very aerobic, and that's very beneficial for you. And aerobic is the way to go. I mean, it's the foundation of your health. It's the foundation of fitness, even if you're, well, probably for any sport with very few exceptions, you know, maybe straight out weightlifters. I mean, you still need some aerobic conditioning. I mean, there's pretty good evidence that even for the purely strength athlete, aerobic conditioning is going to benefit them to the point that they'll be able to perform the same amount of strength lifting, you know, power output for more repetitions than if their aerobic in or if their aerobic capacity was lower than not.
So, and then on the opposite end of the spectrum, then how important is it as distance runners like ourselves? How important is anaerobic activity fitting into our aerobic schedule?
Okay, so you got two types. You know, if you want to simple, keep it simple, but develop or talk about the aerobic anaerobic system a little bit more. The anaerobic, not the aerobic. You've got anaerobic. How it so one of the ways I didn't actually mention earlier is anaerobic has also to do with muscle fibers and, you know, using your more fast twitch white muscle fibers rather than aerobic is your more fat burning slow twitch red muscle fibers, more oxygen burning. So anaerobic is more higher heart rate training, more obviously sprinting, and then obviously and then weightlifting to a certain degree. Now again, you could, you know, do strength training / weightlifting and be aerobic. But for most people, it's going to be anaerobic, you know, power, you know, if you do plyometric type activities, you know, throwing, power lifting, obviously sprinting or, you know, carrying that sort of stuff, heavy loads, you're going to be more anaerobic, which is important when it comes to, you know, an endurance trail runner or any endurance athlete is you need some anaerobic conditioning, but especially for an endurance type athlete, you're going to want a solid aerobic foundation to which you can then further build the anaerobic system off of rather than the other way around. In other words, aerobic comes first. Anaerobic is like the icing on the cake for endurance type athlete.
Dr. Steve, can we talk about some of the benefits of building that foundation or that aerobic base? You know, additional capillaries and the things, mitochondria, those types of things that are, and I'm dropping words out of your own article. So folks, go to sockdoc.com and look under training principles, and he breaks all of this down. It's very organized, well-written, and you can go right through and follow along these very topics, and Dr. Steve has written it well.
And we'll link that to the podcast.
Awesome. So tell us about that foundation and what we're building with this aerobic system.
Well, what it comes down to, and you know, and not just to read off the website, I mean, obviously you're building stuff like your mitochondria, which are, you know, your energy powerhouses of your cells, you know, each cell in your body. But what it comes down to is you're building your health. Not that anaerobic cannot benefit your health, but aerobic conditioning is really what will benefit someone's health and especially their fitness. You know, and it's not the more the better, but for the average person looking to, you know, burn fat and reduce stress, reduce pain in their body, sleep better, perform better mentally and physically just throughout the day, you know, in their life, then that's where the aerobic system comes in. You're not going to get far doing anaerobic training. You will to some degree, but it'll eventually catch up to with you if you that's all you do, and especially if you've built no aerobic base.
I've got to think that anaerobic base as well is important just to create a strong structure, you know, ligaments, tendons. That's a time where it's lower impact and less stress so that you can prepare yourself for higher intensity work later, which is usually the anaerobic type.
Right. Exactly.
I have a quick question on that then, and I don't mean, by no means am I bashing P90X. I'm using that as an example. I've done P90X, and I think it's
hard.
Incredibly tough, and it's very good. But, you know, you see the commercials of Joe Couch Potato that's sitting, you know, up late at 11:30 at night watching the P90X infomercial, and so he goes, I'm going to get in shape. So he orders these videos with P90X, and all of a sudden, he jumps in with both feet with this diet that's you know, 1,000 calories a day or whatever.
All over his body, and he looks ripped.
Stop.
Oh, Faith.
Oh, I thought you meant from the potato chips.
No.
That's what I thought at first, too.
They grease him up, and he's, like, totally ripped.
Oh. Then I saw her eyes twinkle, and I realized it wasn't from the potato chip.
That's when mine started twinkling. But
when you twinkled on potato chips,
yeah,
Scott?
Yeah. But the point is what you're getting to is to take somebody from a sedentary lifestyle and throw them into where all they're doing is anaerobic activity, they're not going to get necessarily the best health results by doing just anaerobic. They need to start with a base of aerobic activity. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I believe is the best way to go for the average person. Now, what's happening is that there's lots of, and again, this is another reason why I wrote the training principles. There's lots of, you know, websites, lots of anaerobic weightlifting, sprinter, CrossFit type gurus out there, and people saying, and lots of, you know, so-called research with people saying aerobic is terrible for you. You don't burn as many calories doing aerobic activity. If you do anaerobic activity, the studies show that, you know, doing 30 minutes of high intensity, which is what we're going to talk about in a minute, I'm sure, the HIIT, high intensity interval training, 30 minutes of that is much more productive in terms of your fitness and burning calories than 30 minutes of you going out for a slow aerobic run. Now, is that true? It's not true, but the problem with that is that, first of all, you're burning primarily sugar, and you're making a lot of stress hormones when you do that. You're pumping out a lot of cortisol. You're throwing off your blood sugar levels. For a guy, you're going to eventually dip your testosterone levels down if you keep that up. For a woman, you're going to drop some progesterone levels and create estrogen dominance. And over time, that's going to catch up with you. You only can do so much anaerobic. But a lot of people are drawn towards this anaerobic because that's what they hear. And most people are training to, you know, get in shape, which really means for the average person, they want to lose weight and you know, kind of get ripped or have some tone. So they're at work all day. They're under a lot of stress, and they don't have perhaps, you know, even an hour a day to work out, or maybe even not time more than a few times a week. So they're saying, okay, well, I can do this, you know, 20 or 30 minutes a few times a week. And, you know, the studies show that, you know, if I do anaerobic, that's going to be, you know, sort of more bang for my buck than if I just go out and do a slow, you know, jog at, you know, a lower heart rate. And that's what they're going to do. But they don't realize the repercussions that come from that over time. They might get away with it for a little bit and see some gains over, you know, a week or even a month. But you can't keep that pace up. Even a professional athlete can. You can't keep that pace and intensity up for, you know, weeks upon weeks. What happens is they get injured, they get sick, you know, something happens. They, you know,
they get
will happen.
Mentally burnt out possibly too, when you're always pushing at that level.
Oh yeah.
You stop to lose you lose some interest.
Absolutely.
So, you know, most of our audience, of course, is out there, you know, doing a lot of aerobic activity. But I think that there are some, and we've talked to many, many runners that go out there and feel that when they're going out there for a workout, they want to go out there and have a top quality, just really push yourself to, you know, your limits and exhaustion, whether that's a 30-minute run or whether it's a 3-hour run. If it's a 3-hour run, by the end of the 3 hours, I want to be completely exhausted and just torn down. And that's not always the best thing to do. You know, we talk to,
Not to interrupt you, but I would say it's never the best thing to do. Not always. It's never the best thing to do.
Okay.
Unless you're racing, maybe. But I would say you should never do that for a training run.
Okay. That's very good advice.
So when do you dip into that anaerobic? Because you do state that there's a good, you need to sprinkle a little bit of it in. So maybe just define that if in fact there is a place for it.
How much and when?
How much and when?
Yeah.
That's what I tried to say.
Let's talk strictly from, since our audience is going to be mostly, you know, endurance athletes. You know, really what it comes down to, and I talk about in the training principles, is first you need to understand where your aerobic sort of zone is. And there's a couple ways of figuring that out. You know, I talk about the 180 minus your age zone, which is Phil Maffetone's formula from his days of training Mark Allen, you know, 7 times or 6 times Hawaii Ironman champion. And that's a great formula. It works for most people. You also have other formulas that talk about, you know, testing for lactate levels, either in a lab or out from runs. But you're really ideally using, you know, you need a heart rate monitor. Even if you're very well in tune to your body and can understand, you know, where, you know, props, you know, if I guess what I'm getting at is, like, people talk about, like, the talk test, you know, like we said earlier, like if you're out mm-hmm. running with somebody and you're able to talk, you're going to be aerobic. If you're out there and you only can say, you know, a few lines or a sentence or two before you got to gasp for air, you're definitely more anaerobic than aerobic. So one way you know your aerobic system is built well is that you see improvements at the same heart rate. So I always advise my patients to not really train for miles, but train for heart rate and time, but understand how far you can go in a certain time at a certain heart rate. And do like a 1 mile test, or even if you can even do a 5 mile test. And if you can run, say, you know, a 5 mile course in 40 minutes at a 150 heart rate today, but next month you run that same 5 miles in 38 or 39 minutes at the same heart rate, then you're developing a more improved aerobic system. Now, if it's the same, you're either doing something wrong or it's time for you to do some different type of training, but you should see your speed increase at the same heart rate. That's what's really important to understand. Not your speed increase at a higher heart rate, because then you're just pushing yourself harder, but at the same heart rate or even a lower heart rate. And then once that happens, it's a clear indication that your aerobic system is functioning properly, and you continue with aerobic training until you don't see as great of a progression, or you obviously plateau. Now, it doesn't mean you have to wait months and months before you do any anaerobic activity. You can start to sprinkle it in, but you have to sort of gauge how your performance is. And really, ideally, is you're putting in, you know, some, you know, maybe some 1 or 2 minutes or even a few minutes types of higher heart rate, like sprints in between maybe a, you know, a 40 or 50 minute run. So you go out for a run, warm up maybe 15, 20 minutes. You could run, you know, 2 minutes at a high intensity, and then do a 3 minutes lower intensity, 2 on, 3 off, for some type of interval training, at least to start to get into some anaerobic type endurance training. That can be done as you're building aerobic base. But again, if you're feeling some aches and pains, if you're not sleeping well, or if you're having any issues, you know, of basically stress, then that means that you're unable to handle aerobic training at that time.
So what you're saying is listen to your body while you're sprinkling in that anaerobic activity.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the things I talk about on my website are, like, little things that nobody not many people know about, and people don't realize what are the good indications of stress. And I'll tell you some right now. Is one, like when you're falling asleep at night, any of you guys ever have like a limb twitch, like your arm twitches like it's possessed?
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a dog?
Yeah.
The dog's leg.
I remember training hard for like Iron Man, and my wife would be like, you just levitated off the bed, you know? Like your whole body just like jolts. That's a great indication of a sympathetic nervous system dominant body. In other words, you're under a crazy amount of stress. Another good indication is your eyelid will twitch. Mm-hmm. You get like a little eyelid twitch anytime during the day.
Mm-hmm.
You ever have any of that?
Oh yeah.
I have. Yeah.
Lower eyelid just loses control.
Lower eyelid twitches. Yeah. Great indication of stress and lack of B vitamins actually in your body. Another good indication is your pupils actually don't respond to light well. So you have problems going in between dark and light rooms. And in other words, you come out of like a dark room during the day and you're like, it takes you a while to adjust to the sunlight, or you have to wear sunglasses all the time, even on a cloudy day. That's
is that why people wear sunglasses inside?
No, yeah, they're super cool.
Yeah, the sun it. Never sets on cool.
That's right. You have to differentiate between coolness and having a problem.
Right.
So, another one is, just general aches and pains that people perceive as, you know, normal. Like, you wake up with like an achy back, or you're standing and you're standing in line somewhere and your knee just kind of like buckles out a little bit. That's always a good one. And I have a whole list on the ZocDoc site of, you know, like little things to look for that, you know, people consider to be normal, or they're, you know, sort of like everybody gets them and nobody knows what they mean. But these are pretty good indications. You know, obviously you jolt at night or your eyelids twitching, or another one, which I always tell people, if you got to get up in the night, middle of the night to go pee, you got to head to the bathroom. That's a sign you're training too hard. And people will always say to me,
I thought
oh,
I was
well,
getting diabetes.
Yeah.
I was getting
doesn't have to get that. People will say, oh, well, I drink a lot of water before you go to bed. And very rarely is that the case. And unless you're drinking a gallon of water. I mean, I drink a huge glass of water before I go to bed each night. Unless I'm training hard and pushing myself too hard, you should sleep through the night. But that's a good indication that you're pushing yourself too hard and you're under a lot of stress and you're taxing your anaerobic system. And these are things to look for, you know, an eyelid twitch, a limb twitch, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to loud noises. Hangnails are a big thing, hangnails on your fingernails. Those are going to happen before, you know, you all of a sudden develop an ITB injury or plantar fasciitis or some other injury or joint pain or whatever. So you can use these as like little tells to tell you to chill out and smarten up before you get a really big injury that's gonna put you out
this
for a while.
That's gold nuggets right there.
Gee, I'm a mess.
Gold nuggets, isn't it?
I think that our listeners just got their money's worth.
Hey, how about resting heart rate? Can you use that
one.
To monitor your
fitness level?
Not fitness level, but your overtraining.
Yep, I like resting heart rate. I mean, I think the 10% rule is a good idea. The only thing tough about resting heart rate is, I'll tell you, for me, my resting heart rate drops, which is obviously an indication, or you're still using my resting heart rate just in a different way. People always say, well, if your resting heart rate's up, I think like 10%, you know, if you're usually like 50 in the morning and you're 55 or higher, then you may be pushing yourself too hard. Mine actually drops before I get, if I'm catching a cold. So I'm conscious of that, where, you know, you could also have like, if you're running yourself down aerobically, and you're pushing your aerobic system too much. Like if you just do a crazy amount of aerobic activity and you never do any anaerobic, especially people training for Ironman or obviously ultras, even marathons, you can really run down your thyroid hormone, and that will actually cause you to have a lower heart rate. So it's not necessarily that, you know, if your heart rate in the morning is 40 and mine is 50, you're not necessarily healthier.
Mm-hmm.
That could actually be a sort of abnormal type low. So you got to be careful about using that.
Yeah,
but it's good per individual.
I was going to ask, I'd like to talk more about, we kind of tore apart the anaerobic, you know, you're going to have an increase in, a decrease in estrogen or a decrease in testosterone. I'd like to tear apart aerobic activity. You said right there, the thyroid hormone can be decreased. What are some other negative effects of too much aerobic activity?
Well, too much aerobic activity. I mean, that's one of the main things I see clinically while I'm working on patients is they'll run their thyroid down, but you'll also see, a lot of times you'll see similar symptoms as someone overtraining anaerobically, but the difference is they tend to not happen as quickly. In other words, the aerobic person, they're just kind of like, you know, the good word for it is kind of like blah. You know, they're like not thinking straight. They're not as sharp mentally as what they should be. They're kind of not going anywhere. Their performance is plateaued or it's slowly decreasing and they just can't get out of the rut. They're like emotionally kind of just stale. You know, and in terms of a physical aspect, you're probably, if you train aerobically too much, you're going to start burning. You know, obviously aerobic is more fat, but you'll eventually just start eating away your muscle and you'll sort of, what will happen is, especially because you affect your thyroid, is you'll start, you'll get a little less lean, I'll say. You'll be like, you know, I used to be, have a six pack and now I got a four, that sort of thing. I've talked about it I actually mentioned it in the training principles because, you know, training for 20 Ironmans over my short little career here, I've overtrained aerobically a couple times too that I can remember. And I remember going into races and I'm like, or even a few weeks before the race, I'm like, God damn, I screwed that up. You know, I did too much aerobic and, you know, just got too involved with too long of bike rides and too much swimming. And, you know, you kind of like, you know, basically, my wife would yell at me that I'm always grabbing my gut and calling myself fat because, you know, I'm hitting 10% or something when I was, you know, eight. So that sort of thing.
You know what I've done is lately, this last week, it's not because I've become lazy, but you might argue that it is, that I've introduced a lot of sleep this last week, and I've just tried to catch up. But I don't know, they say you can't catch up on sleep, but if I feeling that blah that you're talking about, I've started to compensate or try to fix that with just some hours with my eyes shut. And yep. Man, it feels different to get a little sleep in you.
Yeah, and actually, not to correct you, but they say you can catch up on sleep to a certain degree.
Well, I've always thought that. I mean, what, you can't catch up on sleep? So you ruin it at 7 years old and you're done for life, you know? It's like, that's a rip-off.
Yeah, you just have to rip Van Winkle it, you know, when you're 40 and sleep for a few years.
Yeah. Hey, I want to get back to, you know, this is something that has bothered me from...
I know exactly where you're going, Scott Orr.
From day one that I started getting into this silly sport of ultra running. I started with a heart rate monitor because I needed to know where my heart rate was, and I was a gear junkie, so I bought a heart rate monitor. And I'd go out with my friends, Don and Jeff, and we'd be running down the road, and I'd go, hey, guys, what's your heart rate? They go, well, about 135. I'd look down at my watch. I'm at 165.
But not breathing. He's not breathing any harder.
And I'm still talking the same way they're talking. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just, I mean, they've been doing it for years longer than I have. Maybe this is just a slow, gradual process that I'll be able to get my heart rate down. Well, I'm still, when I go out and I do a typical training run, I'll look at my watch. My average heart rate is 160, 165, whereas someone else is 130, 135.
And Scott's
how old are you?
I'm 44.
And he's running a 100-mile run just last summer. I mean, he's fit. And, and if I may submit this before we get your answer, one of the things that I've observed watching the Tour de France one year when they, you know, they have all the stats of each guy. They had two guys riding side by side, and they had their heart rates. And one guy was at 153, another guy was at 135. And I'm thinking, these guys are in the peak of their athletic performance. There must be... you know, something other than just, you know, fitness level and heart rate. And so
my point is I see the formula 180 minus your age.
Yeah.
And I kind
of work for you.
I have to, just to keep my sanity, think that's crap for me.
No, and you know, that's a great discussion, because the answer is you're an exception to the rule. You know, the formula is great for most people. Like, if you had absolutely no starting goal the formula is a hell of a lot better than those charts you see at a gym in the aerobics room, you know, with the 70-80%. Yeah. You know, that the whole 220 minus your age thing is, that's what's crap. What's that?
When I see that and I look down at my heart rate, I'm like, I should be dead right now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then they say, oh, 60 or 80% or whatever. So, you know, the 180 minus your age is great. I actually, when I'm getting a patient, you know, to start from nowhere, I usually give them that formula. For women, you know, because you have to look, you know, if you don't know the formula, look on the Sock Doc site, I talk about it. But, you know, for women, I usually tell them they might have to pump it up and bump it up a little, but I usually see women higher than men a little bit. But in terms of an average, it's a good average. But the thing is, not everybody's average. You know, I tell people, you know, the 180 minus your age formula is, if you're looking at a bell curve of a test grade, it's for the C students. There's plenty of A's and plenty of people who fail. And if you're one of those, then the way to figure out where your heart rate is to either do the lactate threshold type test, which is basically run as hard as you can, race pace for 30 minutes, take your average heart rate for the 10th through 30th minute. And that's a good indication of your lactate threshold, and then get your zones from there. Or spend $100 or so and go to your local university lab, you know, and have them check your lactate thresholds to see exactly what is your R values, or which is also known as your respiratory quotient numbers, to see where your zones are and at what zones you should be training at. In other words, what is your carbon dioxide to oxygen ratio at certain heart rates? The thing is, you know, a lot of people will say heart rate is an output value. You know, it's what your body's giving out. But then there's a whole other group of people say, well, heart rate is really what you're putting into it. It's actually an input value, and what you're putting out is lactate. So there's a little controversy between which one it is. But in terms of, you know, performance, if you're on a bike, you've got a good power. You know, people are big into power meters these days, and they can say, well, this is definitely my output. My heart rate is my input. My power output is obviously my output. How many watts am I pushing? For running, that's a little bit harder to do. You know, you can use, you know, a GPS or a type of, you know, a Garmin or a certain device like that to tell you how fast you're going, and use your heart rate as your input and your speed as your output. But and you're still not going to have a constant lactate level, you know, that can tell you exactly where you are at every time. You can do a finger prick or an ear prick and grab some blood now and then, like in the lab, to figure out your lactate level to kind of get your zones. But, you know, people will say the best way to describe a lactate level is it's a moving target. It's never exactly the same. You can down a couple cups of coffee before you go out for a run, and guess what? Your 150 heart rate that you're usually aerobic at is now a 140 heart rate. You know, now that 150, you're going to be more anaerobic because of what you consume just before you ran. And now you have questions over that, I bet.
Yeah, rewind and explain that, because you just drank a cup of coffee, brought your heart rate down 10% and stayed at 10
points. No, I just drank a
good
beer as we were talking about that.
Oh, yeah. But if you in your example, you drank a cup of coffee, went out, ran the same pace, produced the same output, but your heart rate went down 10 beats per minute. Is that right?
Yeah, so, right.
Okay, I'm ready. Explain that one to me, doctor.
Okay, so here's what people don't know or don't get is that aerobic and anaerobic is a whole lot more than just training and your heart rate. It's really about your lifestyle. If you had to pick one word, it's lifestyle. So, for example, let's talk about someone gets up. You get up and you want to go for a run in the morning. If it's going to be aerobic, what's the best thing to do before you go for a run? Should you eat? No. If it's going to be aerobic, drink some water maybe. But if you got up and say drank some orange juice and down some sugar, or say you really bad, you drank a glass of orange juice and ate a bagel, now you have all this sugar in you, and then you go for your run, that run is more anaerobic or less aerobic, more anaerobic or less aerobic. In other words, you're burning more sugar and less fat now than if you did that on an empty stomach.
So your diet then dictated which system was going to be prioritized over that next hour, regardless of heart rate.
Exactly. So now it doesn't mean that it's going to shift completely, but say you were, and this is proven, you know, if you were to do a lactate test in a lab, say you were, let's just make up some numbers, say you were going to be 60% fat and 40% sugar burning at a 150 heart rate, and now you had that type of sugary diet right before you did that, you're at least going to be 55, 45 fat, or you might even drop that to 50-50. And if you ate enough sugar and your body sensed enough to sugar, you could push that so you're now burning a predominance of sugar over fat at the same heart rate.
So here's a question for you. Have you heard about the product Vitargo? Have you heard about those long chain? So the concept with that, I believe, is that it takes the circulating sugars and it brings it right into your muscles pretty quickly to use for energy. So is that saying that that product's also forcing you to use an aerobic level of an activity because it's eliminating those sugars from your circulating bloodstream? So you're using your aerobic. Is that right? Or am I making this way more confusing?
Yeah, but that product is long chain corn polymers, is it not? It's corn. It's maize. It's waxy maize. It's corn sugars, right?
Right.
So honestly, I don't know how it does that, and I don't understand the chemistry behind that. I've looked at it. It's not that I don't understand the chemistry, I should say. Let me clarify that. I don't understand how that's possible. I mean, that's like saying you're going to burn more fat than if you didn't take that product. Now, I clearly realize that if you're out on the trail and you're doing an ultra, you need some calories. If you're doing an Ironman race, you need some calories. You got to eat something. So is that better than consuming some, you know, a goo pack or something like that, or a Gatorade? Probably. But it doesn't, I personally, and this is not to bash that product or any other similar product, I wouldn't be using that. In other words, if I woke up in the morning or anytime during the day and I'm going to go for a run, I wouldn't be using that to train with. I want to burn as much fat and enhance my aerobic system as much as possible. So I want to do that by burning fat all day long. I want to do that by not needing to eat anything right before or during my 1 or 2 hour run. You know, if you want a good way to tell your aerobic system is working well, you should be able to be at an aerobic heart rate, whatever that may be for you. You should be able to easily run a couple hours on the trail without having to eat anything.
And what happens when you get, you know, into the third, fourth, fifth hour? Walk us through that, because you've done that in your events. So where does that change?
Well, then you need, you know, depending on your intensity, then you're going to need some sugar. You're going to need some carbs, and even some protein is going to be good for you to a certain degree. I mean, definitely too much protein is going to cause some GI distress, but you do need, you know, some carbohydrates. Now, I've always been taught, and the way I've always, you know, so my longest race I've had, I think my longest Ironman was a 14, in between, you know, 10 and 14 hours. And, you know, usually when I've been out of the water and on the bike, so now I'm, you know, an hour or so in the bike, 2 hours in the race, my rule, the way I've learned and always, you know, applied to me, is that roughly 400 calories per hour, you know, if you're at an aerobic pace, but, or, you know, even in high aerobic pace. But the thing is, if you're, you know, obviously going a lot harder than that, then one of two things is going to happen. Well, first of all, you're either going to need more carbs, or you're eventually going to balk. You're never going to be able to eat enough calories to get that into your system quick enough before you run out of sugar. Or if you're going a whole lot easier than that and you're burning predominantly fat and less carbohydrates, then you can either eat less or go longer before you eat again, before you consume some more sugar. So it really depends on how hard you're training or how hard you're racing in that particular race. And it also is the biggest factor is how well you prepared for the race, how well you developed your aerobic system before the race.
So we've talked about this for a little bit. I want to break it down to how is this really going to be meaningful for the nation members. So we're still fairly early in the spring. I mean, we've actually hit the race season, and there's been quite a few races the last couple months. I've gone out there. I've started my training. I'm starting to build my aerobic capacity. What is the best way, in your opinion, to build my aerobic system correctly and efficiently? To make it better.
To make it better. Well, one question I would always ask that person, you, is, what is your goal? Like, you know, is your goal to lose weight, or are you training for an event?
What is your goal, Scott?
What is your goal in life?
Yeah. We'll start with life, and then we'll get back to the run.
Well, first of all, my goal is to finish.
Okay. Yeah. Life? Finish life?
Finish life.
That's a guarantee. You will finish your life.
Sweet.
And then what are your race goals, Scott? What are your race goals? Let's commit. What is it?
Well, you know, the granddaddy of them all, which I ran last year.
Yeah.
I got up.
That was last year. This is this year.
I'm sorry, last year.
Yes.
I'm telling you what my...
Okay.
Well, this year I'm not in that, but I would like to get to a point where I could do sub 24 at a 100-mile race.
Okay.
Sub 24.
Okay.
And just for reference, I did my first 100-miler last year, and I did it in just under 29.
So you want to save 5 hours off that?
Yep.
Very possible. Yeah. There's so much learning. If learning curve is huge on your first one. You know, those, you see
people. There were a lot of factors besides aerobic conditioning that played into my demise there.
Sure.
But,
sure. A lot of that's mental, right? I mean,
there were some physical things.
A few blisters.
Leave it on the trail.
I had water beds on the bottom of my feet.
Okay.
But let's say that I am, let's say I'm in Western States this year, and I've, you know, run a couple races to get in shape, you know, but I still know that I haven't reached my aerobic capacity
potential
yet. What would you suggest going forward to build that aerobic efficiency?
Well, I would basically suggest that you find out exactly where your aerobic zone is right now, whether that's through lactate testing or that's, you know, if you're comfortable with, you know, 180 minus your H formula and adjusting that towards the, you know, the training, you know, in other words, we won't get into that, but you know, you can adjust that number based off,
yep,
your health levels and that sort of stuff. So if you're happy with where your training zone is, then ideally you're looking to increase volume. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And then eventually, you know, once your aerobic system is very well developed, which, you know, is led to question. I mean, you know, that could easily be, you know, okay, you know, you just mentally are starting to get sick of aerobic, or you sort of just get that inkling that it's time for you to do anaerobic. I've had that before. You know, I'm training, you know, this time of the year, and I'm, you know, I've done Ironman, you know, in June usually, and you know, you just kind of like, man, I've just done so much aerobic. You know, I feel like I got to go out there and like ride hard with the bike group, or I got to go, you know, run some hill sprints or something like that. You kind of sort of just get that inkling, and you know, then you can. You would start doing, you know, you obviously want to develop power so you can climb hills and have strong thighs going up the hills and have, you know, some good anaerobic endurance to push yourself where you need to. And you can do that through hill repeats and sprints or, you know, even some plyometric type exercises, but you're still going to predominantly, I don't know if I had to pick a number, I would say easily, you know, 80-85%, your training is going to be mostly aerobic. But the key is, or a big part of this, which is so important, is that your diet has to be aerobic. You know, your life has to be aerobic.
You just opened up a door to another 2-hour podcast, my friend.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't want to starve yourself when you're out running, but you want to train your body to burn fat. So you don't want to be out there on a 2-hour run, you know, drinking corn polymers every 30 minutes or you know, down in a goo every 20 minutes. I'll give you a good example. So I'll tell you a little bit more about myself. I mean, I've been doing endurance training for 20 years now, over 20 years. And last year when I started getting more involved with some of my friends over at MoveNat, which is more like an outdoor type of training, you know, running, lifting, climbing, running around barefoot and doing more outdoor movement, natural type activities is I really increased the amount of fat I was already eating. Probably my diet was already, you know, 50% fat, 25 protein, 25 or 30% carbs before this throughout all my years of Ironman. And last year I bumped that up, last summer I bumped that up probably to like 60, 65, maybe even 70% fat during the day, a lot of vegetables. And I got rid of all grains out of my diet, including rice, obviously wheat, oats, you know, cut the sugar way down. Not that I was eating that much, but, you know, even little things like changing my 65% chocolate bars to 80% and, you know, reducing my honey levels and all that, using a lot of butter and egg yolks. And when I did a half marathon trail run in late 2010, took me about an hour and 45 minutes. I needed three goos during that race to keep me going strong. And this year, 2011, I did it a minute faster. Conditions were a little bit different, but I still did very well. And I didn't need any goo. I didn't bonk at all. I felt much stronger. And now I can run easily, training even at a high aerobic level. I can go out and run the trails with just water, or if it's not that hot out, even without water. I can go and run two, and I've even done, because I got lost in a trail once, I actually ran 2 hours and 50 minutes with absolutely no food. And I wouldn't have been able to do that even last year. I might have been able to go, say, an hour and 30, hour and 40 if I had to. But now I can go 3 hours if I had to without any, because I've utilized my fat storage, my fat burning capacity so much better. And really what I've done is I brought my aerobic system to a whole new level by doing so. So the diet is huge. It's huge.
And you did that purely by diet?
Purely by diet. Exactly.
Wow.
The point here is that your heart rate is going to change somewhat. You know, some people, you know, your lactate levels don't change a whole lot, you know, and your heart rate zone isn't going to change a whole lot. I mean, it's actually going to get a little bit lower as you get older. But it's not like, you know, okay, my aerobic zone is, you know, 140 to 150 now, and, you know, oh, now I trained it. Now it's, you know, 160 to 170. Actually, what happens, and I always tell people, is that one of the things that sucks about getting your aerobic system up really well is that next thing you know, you've trained it so well, you're out there for a run, you look down at your heart rate, and you're like at a 130, and your aerobic zone's 140 or 150, and you're like, damn, I got to start running harder. That's hard to do, you know? And you're out there, oh, I just want to go out for an easy run, and now you get, and even though you're still aerobic, you gotta then you start having to do, you know, push yourself to do like aerobic type sprints, because you're gonna get someone doing a high level, you know, 210, 230 marathon. Even those people, they're obviously, you know, aerobic at such a their aerobic system is so well conditioned, they're always not out there running, you know, even at their 180 minus their age heart rate, they're running a whole lot lower than that, and then they just, you know, have these periods where, you know, they get their aerobic, you know, they get their zone, they run in their zone, is what I want to say, you know, and they're still doing, you know, say a 5 minute mile, you know, they always don't want to be doing 5 minute miles, so they're running like 6 minute miles, but their heart rate is just so low, you know, that it's not like they can always be running a 5 minute mile or some crazy pace, but they've got to do that now and then just to get their aerobic zone up, because they've developed their aerobic system so well.
Can we talk about that diet of 50% fat? Did I hear that right? 60% fat? And perhaps you can tell me what a plate at dinner looks like. And just...
Well, I'll tell you, my breakfast is, you know, three eggs usually, and, you know, obviously the whole eggs right from my chickens in the front of my yard. And then I use a lot of coconut milk. You know, I make a smoothie with, you know, at least a half a can of coconut milk, which is, you know, another 30 or 40 grams of fat. And I throw in some whey protein in there and some berries and drink that. So, you know, my breakfast is easily whatever that is, you know,
yeah.
70, 80 grams of fat, heavy cream. I'm big into heavy. I think the most important fats that anybody can eat, and I talk about this a lot on both the Sock Doc and my other website, drdanjemi.com, that you should be eating coconut oil and coconut milk should be in everybody's house, not canola oil. Not vegetable oils. They should not be in your house at all. You should be using coconut milk for smoothies. You should be using coconut milk for recipes and, you know, eating with your raspberries or strawberries as a snack. You should be using coconut oil for cooking things and butter. You should be using heavy cream instead of half and half. You should be using avocados, extra virgin olive oil, that sort of thing.
This sounds a lot like the paleo diet to me.
It is a paleo diet, yeah. Yeah, which, you know, the paleo diet is nothing new. It's just kind of the new fad. You know, even when I started practice almost 15 years ago, we said you should be a meat-eating vegetarian and eat a lot of fat. But now, you know, the paleo diet is kind of like, you know, you can't look anywhere without seeing that term, which there's nothing wrong with it. It's a good awareness for people. But yeah,
there's
it is.
There's a book out there, The Paleo Diet for Athletes, which I actually have read, and I think that's a really great book.
Yeah.
But
what about milk? What about cow milk rather than coconut milk?
You're not a cow.
You know, in California, you guys can get raw milk, right? We can't here in North Carolina.
Yeah,
at least legally. Yeah, I have my sources. I actually live out in the country here. Yeah, and I can get some raw. A lot of people around here can get raw milk, even though it's not legal. You know, raw milk is the way to go if you can do it. I'm not against milk. Is it great for you? No. Is it terrible for you? I'll say no. Is it great for everybody? No. I mean, a lot of people are sensitive to the casein in there, which a lot of people are sensitive to the casein because of the pasteurization. There's good evidence that the homogenization can cause cardiovascular problems in people. So if you can get raw milk, is that better than pasteurized, homogenized milk? Definitely is. But then you get into, okay, is milk, cow milk better than coconut milk? Well, they're different. You know, cow milk has protein in it, which is good. Coconut milk doesn't. Cow milk has lactose in it. Coconut milk doesn't. It's just fat. Cow milk has a different type of fat than coconut milk. See, the thing with coconut milk, it has what's called medium-chain triglycerides. Coconut oil, coconut milk has medium-chain triglycerides in it. And those are fats that are mostly converted right to energy and help you burn fat more so than a longer chain fat such as those found in butter, you know, meat, and, you know, those sorts of products. So medium chain triglycerides are great for athletes because they help you utilize fat and burn fat.
Steve, can I ask you a question? Would you use coconut milk on a long endurance event?
Oh, milk was a bad idea.
Well, that sounds gross.
Well, if you said it breaks down and it helps you burn other fat. I'm thinking this might be. I've drank soy milk.
During a run.
Ensure. I drink a lot of Ensure.
You should never drink soy milk. Soy milk should be banned. Whole foods should be embarrassed, and other health food stores should be embarrassed that they even sell soy milk. Worst thing you can drink.
You know, this is going to be a very expensive podcast for me.
You're going to go out and buy some coconut milk?
I was going to say, I'm going to go to Whole Foods, which is just down the street from us. I'm going to get my raw milk and my gluten-free cookies, and I'm going to have a good night.
Tell me this.
I'm going to pick on you a little bit. Why would you ever want to drink soy milk?
Oh, well, I'll tell you the answer.
That's what he's looking for.
Well, I was in a terrible spot in a race, Steve. Awful. You know, one of those down times that you think, what am I doing here? And this guy came up to me, John Nichols, in fact, who he's had on the podcast, and he's so generous, the best guy in the world. And he says, Don, have the elixir from the gods. Drink this soy milk. And I did. And I drank it, and all of a sudden my life came back. I was able to, you know, it could have been coincidental. It could have been the water I had with it. It could have been John's presence and his pat on the back. Who knows? But I attributed it to the soy milk. And so things get ugly. I drank some soy milk on that training run, but I don't have any at home. So I'm...
Well, it was probably the sugar. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, because I have a similar story with the first half Ironman I ever did, Panama City, back in my University of Miami college days, 1992, 93, is... I was in one of those days, you know, especially down there in May, it was, you know, god awfully hot. And I was walking during the run, and this guy came, this is my first, you know, longer race, half Ironman. And this guy comes up to me who looked, you know, past me, an older guy, started behind me in the ways, and he goes, drink some Coke at the next aid station. I'm like, I don't drink Coke. I didn't even back then, but I did. And I felt awesome. And, you know, I always tell, I even admit to patients that I'll drink some Coke, even though, you know, it's high fructose corn syrup, unfortunately, here in the U.S. and sugar elsewhere. But, you know, you can kind of break a couple rules when you race, but you sure shouldn't be training that way and using that stuff every day.
I'll break any rule in a downtime on a race.
Well, that's because you don't think straight. Right?
No, I'm not thinking straight at all. I will do anything, almost, within limits.
Yeah.
Well, I could geek out on nutrition all night. I could keep you on the phone all night. I think this is a great topic to have for a follow-up because I just love talking about nutrition.
Anytime we go to food topic and nutrition topic, Faith, she leans forward. Her eyes light up a little bit. She's like, I go, oh, no, we're into the nutrition piece.
She's geeking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we take away from this, right, is aerobic training, essential to...
Very good base. You got to have a base.
It burns fat, and a lot of us are looking to try to get that extra couple of percent of fat that we're carrying around with us, so that's great.
Fat in your diet is not bad.
Correct.
You know, you've been...
It's good. Not only is it not bad, it should be high in your diet.
Because it actually helps you train your body to burn fat.
Exactly.
That doing aerobic work helps build more capillaries. It helps us recover quicker, right? So we can recover from tough training by having better vascularity and exchange of nutrients throughout all the muscles. Correct?
I read that
somewhere in your stuff here.
And then you should incorporate some anaerobic conditioning into your program too.
Dr. Steve, you talked about how we can affect some testosterone and estrogen levels, bring them down with too much anaerobic, but can we also increase them a bit by putting a demand on our body in a controlled way where we're not overdoing it and spike testosterone a bit?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the balance between fitness and health, right? You're unfortunately what happens when you're training or you're preparing for a race, you're trying to sort of peak, you know, and ride that fine line between, you know, being as ready as you can be for a race. Your health is, that's when you're most susceptible. Your health is going to suffer to some degree. As you get more fit, you've got to be careful that you're not inversely, you know, affecting your health. It's going to happen to some extent, depending on how hard you push yourself. That's not necessarily bad, but ideally, the more fit you become, the more healthy you should become, and the more healthy you are, the more fit. They should work directly proportional to one another, rather than, you know, just the overfit, unhealthy person who, and this is jumping ahead, which we'll talk about one day, is the fifth section of the training principles is why a marathon can kill you, and it kills plenty.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I like that one point that we mentioned earlier and is a podcast in itself too, is listen to your body. Listen to whether there's too much fatigue, whether it needs some nutrition, whether it needs some more rest and sleep, whether it needs to hit it a little bit harder. Even during a workout, listen to your body. To be completely tuned in is a real art and needs to be practiced and people need to listen so they can do it. There are people that I see that they don't have any idea what's happening below their neck. If they tell you about back pain or heel pain or something,
you're absolutely right. Yeah,
I don't know. It's just down there. But you end up with an athlete and you speak to them. They will tell you specifically what it feels like, what part of the gait that they feel it in, you know, the intensity, and describe it very accurately. So some people learn to listen to their body very, very well, and that's important for athletes. But I also think it's important, as I'm on a soapbox here, I think it's important just for our overall health, because when we start to sense that something with our viscera, something with an internal organ is going south on us, we have learned to listen to our body well enough to say something isn't right intuitively. I need to get checked out, instead of being blind to what's happening below the shoulders. You can save your life by learning to listen.
You are so wise, Grasshopper.
Ah,
well, you know, a couple other quick takeaways that I want to say that you know, just really hit me. One was the list of things that you can watch for that will tell you whether you're overtraining. You know, the whole idea of going outside, wearing your sunglasses inside, you know, that sort of thing. And the other one is now that I'm getting a little bit older
and wiser.
Now that I'm getting a little bit older,
yeah.
That even though I'm going out and doing these long training runs, and I feel like I'm in very good shape anaerobically, or aerobically,
right?
Aerobically, yeah.
Diet can boost that aerobic capacity or my aerobic fitness. So I can't just go out and eat excuse me, Dr. Steve, but here in the West, we have what we call In-N-Out burgers. You know, you saw exactly
where I
was
going. I can always read your mind.
I can't go get a double-double with a strawberry milkshake and expect that that's going to
eat.
And the fries. Yeah, that's right, the fries. And say, that's okay because I just did a four-hour run.
Absolutely.
What's better is to make sure that your overall diet is conducive and helping you reach that peak aerobic capacity.
Support. I know everybody wants to talk, so I just jumped in first. And matches the effort and investment you made on the trail. Why throw it away? Why go out there and work hard for 4 hours and then rain on a perfectly something?
This is the analogy that's been given to me.
Well, you know, one thing I can't stand is when you know, you hear this a lot in runners and other athletes too. They say, "Well, I train hard so I can eat whatever I want." I ran 20 miles today so I can go just eat crap. That's crap. This isn't about, you know, never have any desserts or don't enjoy good food, but there are things you should never eat. I mean, I don't think people should ever consume partially hydrogenated fat. I don't think people should ever consume high fructose corn syrup or artificial sweeteners. You should be eating good desserts like healthy chocolate and you know, clean sugar, unrefined sugar and, you know, caffeine. And, you know, you'd like coffee? Good. Well, dump heavy cream in it. You know, dump some raw sugar in there or unprocessed sugar. It's not about, you know, limiting your diet. But it doesn't mean you go and get, you know, an artificially sweetened high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated fat, chemically altered milkshake after your run because you're replacing calories that you burn. That's a really poor way to think, and it's a great way to not recover properly. It's a great way to decrease your performance and your health, and it's a great way to get injured. And one thing I want to add in too is that I always see people who say, well, you know, I eat really well and you know, I'm still getting injured and I'm doing all the right things. And, you know, so-and-so, you know, they drink two Cokes a day and, you know, eat bagels every morning for breakfast with, you know, margarine on them and they're never injured. And all I can tell you from my experience, which is a whole lot of it, is that that's not true. Those people are injured. I see plenty of professional, collegiate and amateur athletes to say that these people are injured. They're just dealing with it because they think it's normal. People think that it's normal to have a headache every day. Women think it's normal to have PMS every time of the month. People think it's normal for their knees to hurt if they ran 20 miles. It's not. It shouldn't be. And if it is, you're doing something wrong.
What I always say, or what I've always been told, is treat your body like a Ferrari. You wouldn't put crappy fuel in a Ferrari.
There you go.
That's
I
good.
Like it.
Hey, and so there always needs to be a reward for our consequences, right? There are consequences and rewards based on what we do. So we train hard, and you're telling us, Dr. Ganjimi, if we clean up our diet, we'll be able to run stronger, run longer, run happier. Everything will be better if we look, well, it'll improve if we look towards our diet and make that commitment. It's that important.
Yes. And the thing is, and I'll put a pun on the whole cholesterol, blood pressure BS commercials that you see out there, which I love the line, when diet and exercise are not enough. What a bunch of crap that is. Because these people are told the worst, you know, don't eat fat, don't eat eggs, you know, do a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. And the exercise, walk 3 times a week. Come on, give me a break. They're not told any specific guidelines to really improve your health. So if your diet is truly good, if your exercise is truly good, you're good to go. The problem is people, and it's not their fault. I mean, it's like who's teaching anybody? Nobody. If you're truly, in terms of an endurance athlete, if you've truly built your aerobic base, if you're truly eating the way you should be eating, 90% of the time, even, you're gonna do better than you could ever expect. You know, you should put it this way. I don't think anybody should be doing a run, an endurance activity. If you can't go out and run for an hour without eating anything, and you should be able to go out, run for an hour aerobically, have absolutely no pain, not be able to not have to eat right before that, and not feel like crap after, and not need to eat right away after that. You should be able to do that easily if you're a somewhat healthy endurance athlete.
And it doesn't take that long to change the way your palate. I'm just going to say it. Not that I was trying to figure a way not to say it, but it doesn't take that long to change your diet and what you feel that tastes right, because we've all gone through it. And
absolutely.
We've eaten right, and then all of a sudden we go back to something we used to eat, and we go, my goodness, that is the saltiest, grossest tasting. That diet soda tastes like some kind of chemical, which it really is. But when you're when you're in the middle of it and you're drinking it all the time, it is the most light, refreshing, bubbly beverage on the planet. But
are you salivating right now?
I may have a little problem with the diet soda.
I tell you, 3 weeks, two to 3 weeks.
All right.
Yeah, and going back to my little story, like I used to drink Coke in between. You know, I would water it down and drink soda during a race. And when I did a 100-mile bike race last year, after I had already, you know, and I would never drink soda other than during a race, or that was the only time I was ever getting high fructose corn syrup. I couldn't even stand it last year after I had just increased my fat a little bit more and my carbohydrates a little bit more than what I was already doing. It was a sugary before, but I could stand it. I can't stand it at all now. And I hear that all the time with patients who are, I see people come in and they're, you know, they're addicted to, you know, soda, either regular or diet, and they're drinking it every day. And if they really get rid of that 100%, right, it's one thing, you know, you never get, the rule is you sort of never guarantee a patient you can fix them. That's just wrong. But the one time I'll guarantee a patient something is I'll say, you know, I guarantee you, if you stop this soda and you change your diet and you try and drink this in a month from now, you're not going to want to drink the whole thing. And it's a guarantee. It happens every time. A lot of times they won't even want a sip of it. And if they do take a sip, it tastes terrible to them, because you've literally changed your chemistry. And that's what should happen. But a lot of people don't give it time. They might, you know, go from drinking a can of soda a week or a day, I mean, to say, you know, a half a can a day or a few a week. And you really got to do, if your diet is bad, here's a little take home for you. You got to do it 100% for 2 to 3 weeks before you could slack off a little bit. In other words, you can't do 90%. You got to do 100% before you can go back to do 90%, because that's how long it really takes to shift your chemistry from being a sugar burning type of person to a fat burning type of person. And then once you do that, then you can, you know, obviously not drink soda, but you can handle, you know, maybe a spoonful of some good sugar in your coffee after a few weeks, and it's not going to affect you to the extent that it was when you were trying to get to that level. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. Well, you've convinced me. I'm until our next podcast, I will tell you how many sodas that I have had, and I'm going to have to be honest. Because
how many sodas do you drink right now?
He's sitting over here with a big gulp.
No, I do not have a big gulp with me. This thing has water in it. And it's very nutritious. So, do I go on the record? Oh, I'll easily have two a day.
Wow.
Two 12-ounce. No, I probably, nobody, I should probably up my life insurance policy right now based on the fact I'm going to tell you their diet.
Don, the last time I had a soda was during Air 50, and that was 2 weeks ago.
Really? Okay. Then if you can do it, I can do it.
I have been 1 week
soda-free
without carbonation.
So you guys are all like recent soda addicts, and Don, you're drinking
Faith's not.
I do not drink soda.
Faith's a health nut. Don and I, we like our Diet Coke.
Yeah. I mean, 12 ounces. That's
terrible.
Well, you could go to like a shop and put your cup underneath it and get 24 ounces. So that's two sodas worth, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're not counting. I'm not counting a 44-ounce soda as one soda. I'm saying two 12-ounce cans.
Well, I'm glad you're trying to justify it.
Well, here's the point.
Yeah. What is the point?
These podcasts have been designed not only to help the nation, but selfishly to help ourselves. And I think that we've been motivated. I know I have during this podcast to make some changes in my diet.
All right. Dr. Steve, what are you going to change? Do you have anything that needs changing? Let's all come on the table here. I'm going off with
confession
soda.
Time.
Confession time. Put up, Doc. What are you gonna change?
What are you drinking right now, Doctor?
Well, I smoke 2 packs a day. I'm just kidding.
Okay, stop smoking. That's an easy one for him to quit, though, because he really doesn't.
There we go. No. You know, I mean, honestly, I practice what I preach, and I'm not just saying that. And you know, who knows, maybe you'll get one of my patients listening to this and they'll confirm it. I always tell my patients, actually, it was just in Whole Foods yesterday during a lunch where I'm usually hanging out, and, you know, whenever a patient's in there, they always got to come up and just look at what I'm eating, you know?
Yeah.
And I love good food. I love cheesecake. I love dark chocolate. It's not that I don't like sugar. I mean, I have four beehives here at my house. I like honey.
I've got one for you, yeah. Dr. Steve. Be a little kinder on the road. Let people merge in front of you. You know,
no. If we're talking more than diet, yeah, then I'll chill out on the road rage.
Yeah, I got it. I had to come up with something because you know, we've got it. We each come to the table here.
He ain't perfect.
You know what? I'll tell you what I'll do. I won't be as mean to people who stretch and wear orthotics.
No, you need to keep on that one.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Steve, we appreciate you coming on tonight and or this evening for you and more late afternoon for us and sharing information about aerobic training, anaerobic training, diet. And I think there isn't anybody that can't look at themselves straight in the mirror and say, I got to change the man in that mirror.
Good to hear.
Little Michael Jackson going for you.
Agreed. Well, Trail Nation members, thanks for joining us. We hope you had a really long run on this podcast. We know that you had fun out there listening. We had fun doing it for sure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So make sure you go on the website. Give us your comments on this podcast. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what's working for you. Let us know what's changed for the better.
And I don't mean to interrupt your flow, Scott.
You are, though.
Scott, I know. But Sock Doc, underneath his principles, he has a great number of comments underneath, and he addresses each comment. So people get on there, they talk about what they've learned. He comes on and builds on that comment the person's made. So,
and if you say something stupid, I'm going to call you out on it.
So be careful, huh?
Be careful. Please do not call me an idiot.
it's my website.
It's a spirited board.
It's my I've had people say you shouldn't be bashing your readers like that. And you know what? It's my website. If you disagree with something, you better back it up. Don't call me an idiot.
Surf away.
With that, go out and run.
In my life, it's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turned up the corner on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. See the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see their needs? The summer's disregard, a broken bottle top, and one man's soul. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got no place to go. That's why I want you to know. Make the change.
Yeah.